Right, wife. Life good. Wife fight back. Kill wife. Wife gone. Think about wife. Regret.
Hey.
Oh my god, that cracks me up.
Do you like that one?
No, it's just funny.
Why don't you like that one? It's so true.
It's just so dumb.
It's a true story.
Really?
Yeah, life is full of true stories. Did you know that?
Did you throw me far, far away and then regret it?
Well, you don't take it literally.
Just, well, what's the difference between true and literal?
Well, one has a truth to it.
Okay.
The other one actually happened.
Okay. So tell me how this applies, this as a metaphor.
Well, some days you're just going along and you have a life, you know,
yeah,
and you're riding your life and, you know, and then life starts to fight you.
Okay.
And then you destroy it.
Oh.
You completely obliterate it because you can't be bothered anymore. So you just like, you exhumed it, you yeet it.
Yeet it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you think about what you had.
Yeah.
And you think about it. And life is empty. There's nothing to ride anymore.
So it's wishing all your problems away and then finding yourself completely bereft after your problems are gone.
It's about tolerance, right? Like having, like getting to your limit. I have to make sure that the, hope you guys can hear us.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. It's interesting. So wife as metaphor for life.
What else would wife be a metaphor for?
I don't know.
What is life?
Is wife a metaphor?
There's different ways of thinking about, you know, romantically or poetically. We had an argument that wasn't an argument
about
last
gender.
Time. About gender. About like, yeah, what is this semantic category?
Yeah.
If you think about the wisdom of the ages, a lot of it is coded, male and female. You know, there's old wives' tales. You know, there's a lot of wisdom that comes down from mother to daughter, grandmother to mother to daughter, and the attempt to equalize and eradicate sex categories as not just as salient but as sacred.
Mm-hmm.
Has had the effect, I believe, of squashing a lot of wisdom, or squashing the means to communicate wisdom about what it is to be a woman, what it is to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use the term gender to refer to that stored amount of knowledge, of human knowledge that's based around the social aspect of our dimorphic species.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a conversation and we both got frustrated because we were both like, you were making a point that gender is a fallacious and dangerous.
Well, I say that it should not be seen as something separate from sex, that you can describe the differences in personality and temperament and femininity and masculinity without needing to create this whole gender spectrum. And gender used to be synonymous with sex,
mm-hmm,
the word. And it was kind of euphemistic even, because the word sex feels a little bit strong. It doesn't feel comfortable to necessarily use on a form. Are you, you know, sex, male or female? You know, gender felt euphemistic. And I think that there was some creep. Maybe somebody knows the etymology of this better than me. But certainly when I was an undergraduate and I studied psychology of gender in my undergraduate program,
mm-hmm,
it was still being used as synonymous with sex at that time. Render.
Continue.
Gender.
Yeah.
Are you going to tell us what this says?
Oh, continue with your story.
No, it's just, I don't think that it was used as a way to describe the femaleness or maleness of someone's personality, the way it's being used now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I was objecting to.
Yeah.
Not that there shouldn't be ways to describe the femininity or masculinity of someone. We've always had those. And I don't think that it's a very useful term. I think it's reductive.
How is it reductive?
Because it reduces things down to this, you know, we can start to categorize things in terms of gender and gender spectrum. You end up with this mess that we have right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's linguistic.
My point has been that just because something is misused mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's useless. And because there's an existence or there's a prevalence of people being really ham-fisted with these ideas and using them improperly mm-hmm. and poorly doesn't mean that there isn't any use for thinking about the categories of masculine and feminine. Mm-hmm. I have to stop the sound that's happening down the hallway. Can you take over?
Is it driving you crazy?
It's getting in the recording.
I'm peculiar about sound, as you know.
It's kids and Legos. Kids and Legos.
He's throwing coins into
it. Okay. Yeah. Benjamin's very picky about sound, so... he's going to go and I don't know what I'm just filling right now. I can't even see myself. So I'm going to read this. It says gender noun, the male sex or the female sex, especially when considered with reference to social and cultural differences rather than biological ones.
Yeah, go to the usage. So usage. The word gender has been used since the 14th century as a grammatical term referring to classes of noun designated as masculine, feminine, or neuter in some languages. The sense denoting biological sex has also been used since the 14th century, but this did not become common until the mid-20th century. Although the words gender and sex are often used interchangeably, they have different connotations. Sex tends to refer to biological differences, while gender more often refers to cultural and social differences, and sometimes encompasses a broader range of identities than and the binary of male and female. So that last part has been tacked on.
Well, I wonder how much of that has been altered, actually. I wonder when the last time this would have been altered.
Don't have notes on when. And this is just Apple's built-in dictionary. Mm-hmm. The origin is late Middle English from Old French, genre, modern genre, based on Latin genus, birth, family, nation. The earliest meanings were kind, sort, genus, and type, or class of noun, etc., which was also a sense of Latin genus. And so this is about typography. No, is it typology?
Taxonomy. Taxonomy.
Yeah, so this is just taxonomy. Type, yeah. So what you were pointed at from the conversation was that you see, and I've seen, I mean, I've spoken with detransitioners, specifically young kids who are caught up in trying to codify every act that they do in mm-hmm. terms of gender. Mm-hmm. And if they obsess around this taxonomy, it locks them in and it's a way of filtering life and then kind of recreating oneself or dominating the world by organizing it, by projecting mm-hmm. some sort of, you know, kind of very rigid, mm-hmm. what we call regressive sex stereotypes on every given action, mm-hmm. which I think is just the bad way of going about doing it. Mm-hmm. But when, in my example that I've used since I've been in this gender critical discussion, saying that I'm gender positive, I'm not gender critical. If we destroyed gender tonight, we'd invent it tomorrow. To quote Nietzsche, we can't get rid of God because we can't get rid of gender. We can't stop thinking in terms of male and female, of masculine and feminine, and all of the wealth, again, of wisdom and information that's coded from father to son. You know, you talk about the men, you talk about the boys, and we can critique that. There's toxic masculinity, there's sacred masculinity, there's toxic femininity, there's sacred femininity. We tend to only call out the negative stuff, the toxic stuff in our culture, and we downplay the sacred stuff because we think in terms of power dynamics. Chivalry is about dominating the woman rather than serving her, you know. Mm. Henpeckery and a lot of things that we've spoken about have been about gender and its relationship to sex.
Well, but if gender is about type, taxonomy, and classification,
yeah.
then how is it useful as something different from sex? How can you type things and classify things? I mean, is gender what you're talking about when you say someone is a butch lesbian?
Yeah, that's
because
one way.
I would say that that's something that ends up being reductionist and less useful and less interesting.
The category butch lesbian?
No, gender. I mean, why not just say butch lesbian? Why not just say effeminate man?
Okay.
Or why not just say very masculine man or very feminine woman? I feel like the word gender, if it's meant to be type, falls apart in
Well, so does sex.
It splinters. Well, how? Because sex is not on a spectrum.
See, I don't know why you're miscommunicating. somehow there's something here we're miscommunicating. So
it's really important get on the same page.
I would rather use the term gender to refer to this sex coded social and cultural patterns, mm-hmm. rather than I'm just going to use gender instead of the sex coded social and cultural.
Okay, well then patterns. Use it in a sentence. Describe someone using gender without describing their characteristics. You'd have to then resort to labeling and subcategorizing gender, wouldn't you? So how is it useful?
Gender would refer to masculine and feminine rather than male and female.
Okay.
Yeah. So gender is just referring to that set.
Okay.
I don't use it in a, I don't use gender to talk about gender.
So someone could have a masculine gender, but be a female?
No. See, again, no, it's not an identity. I guess this is another thing. Gender isn't an identity. It's just a category.
Then how's it
a subset?
Useful?
It's a subset of, like, when I think of my novels, I have female and male or feminine and masculine archetypes that manifest throughout various forms of literature, from myth to fairy tale to modern to genre fiction to diary and to stuff like that. So the gender is just a set of the set of associations and patterns of behavior that as I grow as an author or a storyteller, I can make a more, quote, believable female character.
So sex-typed characteristics.
They are interrelated to sex.
Okay.
They sit upon sex. They interact with sex. They're heavily informed by sex. I feel like this is just a stupid conversation because it's just not going anywhere.
It's okay.
I regret this conversation.
So it started yesterday. We started having this conversation
because
where's the, here I have, I was looking through.
Oh yeah, let's shill for
Nina,
Paley.
Nina Paley's Gender Wars cards. And we were sitting at the table. It was just before dinner or during dinner. I don't know why I was looking at something like this during dinner, but.
I think your son was.
Had him on the table.
Okay.
And what is that one? Jennifer Pritzker.
That's a billionaire. Something wrong with my camera.
They're cute.
Dave Chappelle.
She's so good. Oh, wait, where do I go?
You can figure it out.
Drag queen story time. And yeah.
They're called gender wars.
So we're looking at these, or I was looking at these, and Julian saw them, and he said, what is gender? I don't think I had that one out. That's funny. That's Buck Angel. Cute. And he said, what is gender? I know we've had this conversation before. He's 12. He just probably wanted, he always wants to get into definitions of things and talk about them. And so I said, why don't we ask Benjamin what he thinks? What is gender? And then you gave a really complicated philosophical response. And I was really just thinking we were going to talk about gender in terms of the...
Such a female typical way. Like you wanted me to say your thoughts in my voice.
Yeah.
But so. You didn't give me that prompt.
Well,
explain it like I'm five. What is gender? Explain it like I'm five.
Okay. Well, I guess that was what I wanted to have a discussion about. What is it? It used to be the same thing as sex. It used to describe whether something was male or female. And now it's being used to describe a spectrum of different identities and how people feel about how masculine or feminine they are. And that's the way that it's being used right now.
Yeah.
But this is sort of these are aspects of personality, and people have lots of differences. They can be they can be male or female and have masculine and feminine characteristics.
But the masculine and the feminine characteristics make sense. It makes sense.
Of course,
a butch lesbian.
Even though
we're not supposed to admit that that's a regressive stereotype.
I don't think that it is. I'm not suggesting that it is. I just think the word gender is useless in that context. The word gender is
well, you're not
wrong.
Talking about the word then, you're talking about the ideology.
And
you're talking about the use of the word.
Yeah, I'm criticizing the use of the word.
There's this, somebody said that Brett and Heather use gender as expressions of sex. And that's an important category
and I'm going to butcher this, but in evolutionary biology, they talk about the phenotype and the genotype.
Yeah.
They talk about the phenotype as the expression of the genotype. Mm-hmm. And then there's the DNA, there's the genetics, but it's expressed. And then there's the extended phenotype being the environment. And I think that those categories are very important. And when I tried to make it make sense, and before we got derailed into this category taxonomy discussion, I was trying to say, you know, there's a set of expectations and stereotypes that you have to apply loosely, but that will help you to navigate intersexual relationships.
Well, you're talking about heuristics, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that those are important, and we use those in all kinds of ways. In fact, the first category people recognize about another person when they see them is their sex slash gender. I think gender, I really do want to get back to that being synonymous with sex. That's how I use it. That's how I talk about it. I don't see, I do see a meaning in all the things you're saying. I just don't like the word being used that way. I think it does mean category. Mm-hmm. It means, it is a categorical term. So to apply it to something that's not easily categorized, like how masculine or feminine somebody is, because those are made up of lots of different characteristics. It's your whole personality. Like how there's so many different aspects of self that could be described as masculine or feminine. So to drill down into someone and try to box them in terms of some gender spectrum,
it's just because something's misused doesn't mean it's useless. So in terms of writing a female character, like just telling a story and you give the pronoun she to this character, you're going to hew to this kind of sense of the feminine.
Yeah.
Now that's just going to kind of be like this kind of broad range. And then the personality of that individual character is going to manifest within kind of like this strata of expectations and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that strata is not as particularized as sex. Sex is it's a loaded term. It means it's very biological. It's very rooted. It's very materialistic.
Which is why we have gender, which is part of sex.
Yeah. So going through and saying it's bad storytelling to start to describe a character as a feminine character. That's bad storytelling.
Who said that?
Well, that's not a story. You describe how she interacts with her environment rather than, and then she very femininely picked up the coffee cup and then masculinely put down the pen, you know? And you could do that, but you'd run out of the descriptive power.
It's interesting because I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
I know. Why are we fighting? I want to kill wife. Regret.
You know what? Speaking of that,
what?
It's so funny. The other night when you put on Twitter, you made a joke that love is either hard or it's difficult.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be like a little bit of a dirty joke. But all the responses were like, oh, I hope you guys are doing okay. It's so funny that this actually is quite an argument for us. Like, you're really, really kind of frustrated that I don't see your side of things on this gender topic.
It's a feeling, man.
Oh my gosh. There
is a gender soul.
You really think so?
I'm sorry to say. People use it wrong, but like, there's a sense of somebody that you get. And, you know, I had Mia, Crimea River, Mia Hughes on last week, and I wish it got 100,000 views, but I think I'm kind of soft shadow banned on YouTube. I just don't get the plays that even you get. I have consistently great plays, and thanks everybody for tuning in. But, you know, she was, I kind of exploded or I kind of pushed her on like the gender thing. You know, she said she wants to end this thing called gender because it's leading to these horrific stuff. And it's absolutely being led into horrific stuff. I've been doing a lot of work for a major professional organization, just going through and helping them with their video production. And the stuff that we already know, everybody on my channel knows, the stuff that you know, the stuff that I know, that are presented in these presentations, you know, I'm going through, I'm editing, I'm doing the captions for this stuff, which is a lot of just like moving words around. And then I listen to what they're saying. And it's like these people nonchalantly saying, oh, you know, we probably shouldn't like stop somebody's puberty because then like we want to give them a female vagina. Mm-hmm. They won't have enough skin. So we're going to have to take skin off of their bowel. And you're like, wait, a female, you're going to create a female vulva? Like, that's not how any of this works. And you're just like, this is absolute evil. And Mia was like saying, this is a total absolute evil. I'm like, well, I can't remember the context in our conversation, but I'm like, but she had this collar. She had this little floral collar around her. And I made like this thing. It's like, well, yeah, but you still express that stuff. You still... Mm-hmm. You still, you know, you have a feminine collar, and I don't know what this collar is, but this is not a feminine collar. And then she kind of backed off. She's like, no, I really enjoy that expressive quality of, you know, of clothing and of, you know, and, you know, she's English. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to be called British. I don't know what that's about, but she's English. And so they have a long, you know, especially in the aristocracy, have a long, cultivation of male and female behaviors and manners and the way that you even pronounce things. You know, in California, we talk about upspeak, and I can't remember what that is, but like a lot of female typical, valley girl typical modes of expression, that's a very gendered expression. It comes from a particular time and place. It really doesn't have anything directly to do with the ovum or the large egg or the small gamete or whatever that is when people try to get biological essentialists to unravel the whole transgender thing. That valley girl speaking is very cultural. That's a very gendered expectation. That stuff is the basis of so much beauty in culture. It's so much of culture. The real beautiful part of human life is around dancing around the sexual tension or the sexual reality and kind of layering filters on that, layering expectations on that, both intersexually in the way men and women behave amongst themselves and with each other. Mm-hmm. And there's certain, I think if you have more refined cultures, you're going to have more refinement, more expectations that are coded on sex, on gender. So it's just like as a semantic field, as a field of meaning, it's very important to preserve that. And that's why I want to, while completely agreeing with you that gender as it's used is horrific, evil, and stupid, there's so much more refined aspects of human culture that aren't being really looked at and appreciated because we want to just revolt against them.
No, there's a lot. There's a lot there. I think for one thing, by whom? Like, aren't being looked at by whom? Because I don't think that we have some kind of human hive mind. I mean, if you boil it all down to the stupid comments that you see on a website like Twitter, and you see the way things bounce around there, it's like these little, it's a river of conversation that runs into these eddies, and just there's all this sort of, I don't know, it's its own bubble. It's its own set of echo chambers. Okay. And so if that's the we that you're talking about, then then maybe there's that. But also I think that conversations and defining life and understanding ourselves happens in small places in small ways everywhere all at once. And so I don't really know what that looks like overall. We can kind of get a feel for the zeitgeist and we can look and see what professional organizations are doing. But there's not really a hive mind of people who are not doing it right or are doing it right. I don't know what that really means. But also gender, all the things that you describe about femininity, masculinity, social traditions, social expressions, things like that. I think that that's, I don't disagree with you at all. I don't at all. I agree with you 100%. I just think that if you're going, and maybe I'm being too literal, but you use gender and you just read the etymology of it, genre. We're looking at category. Yeah. I don't think it's useful to try to break down the way that we express ourselves in categories like that. I think that they defy categorization. There's so much more fluidity to the way that human beings express themselves in across the board, whether it's through sexuality
or gender fluid then. Gender is a fluid.
I don't think gender should be used that way. I think gender, if we're talking categorically, we should leave that in the realm of categories. And that the things that you're describing, I would say I appreciate them too much to try to use a word that means category to define them.
Okay. See,
so it's semantic.
Okay. The semantic argument's not inherently interesting. What's interesting is the reality of it. What are we watching? We're going through, we're watching something.
Mad Men.
I've watched it. This is my 12th. Watching it.
That's a lot
of that. It deserves that amount of attention.
How do you manage to do that? Do you like watch each episode a couple of times before you move to the next episode, or do you really sit through an entire show?
Well, I mean, when did it come out? 2009, 2008.
I don't know.
It's a 16-year-old show. Okay, you know, if I watch it every 2 years, that's 8 times already. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. It hasn't been 12, but it's a lot. I've watched it a lot.
Yeah, you like it a lot.
You like it a lot too.
I do. We're like what, 4 or 5 episodes?
We're on episode five okay. now, and you know you said, oh, there's a lot of feminism stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because the divorcee is wearing pants.
Well, yeah. And the men's behavior is just atrocious. It's totally like written to reinforce
yeah.
feminist. Tropes.
Yeah.
But maybe that's accurate. It really is choosing to depict the men as really, really terrible.
One of the reasons it's worth so many watches is that every character gets time to develop and not just be terrible, not just be this one where, you know, there's total assholes. Like Pete Campbell is just a dick.
Well, so is Don Draper. I mean, he's awful so far.
Well, what's Don Draper's real name?
Dick. Yeah.
Okay.
No, okay, that's interesting. But yeah. I feel like Orwell's house cat's going to like this, because I'm going to say, I feel more feminist since watching Mad Men. I'm joking, but it does make you mad. I mean, it's like this, they're just catting around. They're just, they're like, it's men are sociopaths so far in this show.
Mm.
Except for the one really sympathetic character who shows
Ken
up,
Cosgrove?
Don's brother.
Oh, no, he's a jerk. Don's brother. Yeah. He's a weak man, though.
Yeah, but he's like a child. He's like a boy.
Yeah. But just on the level of the aesthetics, like, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, look at her hat. And you're like, oh, I like their suits, you know? Like, isn't that nice to have those categories, to have that kind of social enforcement, to go back in time and say, oh, I get to fit into this mold.
And oh, I just feel nostalgic for it. I feel like, oh, I wish people still presented that way. It's
and
so pretty.
There's less, it's interesting. This is probably a really tired trope, but there's less variance in the male's dress than in the women's dress. Women have a much broader bandwidth
that's
of
true,
fashion.
Always.
Men are kind of like much more squashed. That's just a really interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Our race or our species is different than the peacock. The male is like the flamboyant one, and the female selects. But in our culture, and I know Brett and Heather probably have something going on about this, or at least Heather probably has some really interesting insights about that. Mm. Why women produce themselves, and I, you know, the women, and it's helpful to watch this show with you now because there's aspects of you that are very womanly that are being expressed in this show about just your particular. The particular importance of a certain bandwidth of manners or dress or like self-production, like you're very, and it's not, it would be really ham-fisted or crude to say you're vain or you're, you know, but vanity is serving like this cultural respect. You're respecting your audience when you dress up. You're respecting everybody around you when you dress up. So, you know, and so like the interplay of like your production and yourself is just, it's really, it's expressed in the way that the women are always putting on makeup or like, they're very proper. They're very aware. It's really nice to see that as a cultural, not baggage, but like a cultural influence on you and where you come from. And, you know, like the history of your family and how women were taught to be women by women and then probably by their environment and by men.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like there's a lot of different branches on that tree. In fact, it was interesting. My
daughter
got married.
Are there any monkeys on those branches?
Well, depends on who you ask, I suppose. Yeah. My daughter got married this weekend, you know, and she didn't want to wear any makeup for her wedding. I thought that was interesting. It was so strange. I had like this moment of like, really? Like, I couldn't believe it. I kind of like, I know this sounds really superficial and strange, but like she said she wanted a little, but she was really cautious about how much we were going to put on her. She had my sister and her sister, my other daughter, in there. And all of us were like having to be really careful about not over making her up. She allowed my sister put a little foundation on her, and she put on a little bit of mascara and a little bit of eyeshadow. And I had to talk her into a little sheer lipstick. It was very sheer. I had to talk her into it. There was no way she was going to do eyeliner, no eyebrows. It was just like, she was just going to be very, and she's really pretty. She's got a fresh face and she's a beautiful girl. But she said the last time she wore makeup was her high school prom. She's 25 now. And I was the one who put the makeup on her for her high school prom. I thought she looked gorgeous, but I'm so used to putting... Anyway, we're having this really silly conversation right now, but because you brought it up, it's kind of interesting. You do? Okay.
Well, it's about Mad Men.
Okay.
And there is this subreddit on Reddit that was devoted to Mad Men. Still kind of rather active, you know, but especially when it was playing, like it was really active. And that was part of like how I watched Mad Men so much, because you watch it when it came out and mm-hmm. you experience, and then you go back and you think about it, and then you go back and you rewatch it and you break it down, because it's one of the most literary series out there, just in the amount of subtext mm-hmm. and like double entendre, and it's going back, and all the episodes are really constructed, so there's a mm-hmm. theme going there, and mm-hmm. so your brain, while you're thinking about it, you can start to fit the Lego pieces, like, oh, we heard this mm-hmm. concept in this story, it's showing up over here, and we're tugging apart, like last night's mm-hmm. episode was about privacy and the businessman, and, mm-hmm. and it's really about, the show's really about identity, a lot mm-hmm. of the show's really about identity. There was this one scene in a later season where Peggy didn't have any makeup on, mm-hmm. and I just expressed on the subreddit how pretty she is when she doesn't have any makeup on. And I got dogpiled. This is before I was on Twitter.
Wow.
By the women saying, how dare you? She has tons of makeup on. You have no idea. You men are so idiotic. You think that nothing went into that? Like she just showed up and she was just camera ready and stuff. Makeup on, you know? But it looked like she didn't have any makeup on. But they schooled me, you know. But it was really interesting how passionate they were about how much attention to detail they put into being a woman.
Right. That's really interesting. I can relate to that. Yep, the no makeup look, when you see it on TV, it's a lot of makeup going into that no makeup look.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah. Somebody did say, I think somebody was saying that they disagreed with fashion, men not having a lot of fashion. I want to go back and read that because... Oh, man. And I can't look through it.
There's two super chats. I put Jimmy's getting inky with it on, but...
Yeah, let's read this then.
Okay.
Could be seeing gender as how one expresses their sex individually, and similarities are seen versus seeing sex as a group which share certain behaviors, which are then used to describe the gender. Mm. And then thanks, Mason.
That's nice.
For the super chat.
Yeah,
I mean, I understand what you're saying. I don't want to get stuck on a semantic debate. I want to preserve the... ability to convey, and what we didn't get to in the conversation mm-hmm. last night mm-hmm. was that how do you communicate to boys who are prepubescent this conversation? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that you wanted to warn them against this fallacious ideology that's using gender to destroy people, which is terrible because gender is like the source of so much.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I entered into the conversation, I'm like, okay, well, you guys are going to have to learn that girls are different than boys. How are they different than boys is a rule of thumb. And so we're going to teach you very simple tricks that you're going to then have to modify.
Well, they learn those just by interacting socially.
Yeah. Like, so gender is just the stuff that we expect of you.
We
to be gentlemanly.
You know, our homeschool group, it used to be all the kids played together.
Yeah.
And they still do. They're all friends. Sometimes there's games where they're all playing together, all doing the exact same thing. And they're running around doing something cooperatively. They all get along. There's no cliques. It's really, that's one of the really nice things about the homeschool group, the friends, they're like, they're, we've described them as being more like cousins. They're just really close and there's not that cliquishness. But there are a lot of times when the girls will be occupied doing something very different from what the boys are doing. Like one day us moms were sitting around talking. We look up, the boys are all gathered along the shore of the river, throwing things in, putting sticks in, getting their boots submerged, you know, just playing in the, on the mucky shore. And all the girls were sitting on a blanket with a couple of dolls that one of the girls brought. And it was funny because there's like 16 kids and they have grouped to a person by gender.
Yeah.
And I would say gender.
Yeah, I was reading somewhere.
Not sex, but sex is
that even
too.
Even if you, somebody was saying, you know, even if you say, okay, like a car is not a boy toy, a doll is not a girl toy. If you give a girl and a boy a car or a doll, they're going to do different things with it, generally speaking.
Generally, yeah. I think the...
Generally speaking.
The whole gender thing comes in to the conversation in order to... really
observe.
Well, I was going to say to do that thing that we see so much with the diversity conversation, which is to fold in the marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
It's to say,
yeah,
you're different.
I get annoyed by that.
And we want to be inclusive to the people who are different. And I think that that is a problem of population, because in small groups, differences are okay. But in large groups, you have to start making rules and codifying the differences. Mm. And so it becomes kind of a population issue. It's a scale issue.
Oh.
I think a lot of this comes down to scale.
Is this, now you're going to go on your degrowth rant?
No, I'm not going to go on a degrowth rant. Kill wife. Regret.
Think of life.
No, but the makeup thing is interesting too. And the how do you teach? So my mom was really beautiful and really identified closely with that. In fact, it was very painful for her to age. It was really painful for her to I think beauty was a burden for her. It was really not a good thing. It didn't make for a well-rounded, happy life. Being beautiful felt like something to hold on to and to be desperate about. And I think that I always felt that she conveyed some of that to me, some of that fear of not being pretty enough, that need to be pretty. And I really didn't want to give any of that to my daughters. I wanted to make sure that was like one of the things I went into parenting with the intention of, I am not going to make these kids feel like beauty is a really important part of their identity. Their identity, as much as I have the ability to help them shape that, is not going to be hinging upon outside affirmation of their appearance. And so even though I put on a full face of makeup every day of my life, unless I've been sick, I didn't want them to have to feel like that was important. I didn't describe them. I didn't compliment them on being pretty. If they made an effort with their appearance, I would compliment them on what they made the effort on, you know, like, oh, that looks really fancy. That looks like a nice dress or whatever it was. But I didn't say you're so pretty, because I felt like I heard that so much and it created in me an insecurity. Like if I'm so pretty and then I go to the mirror and I don't look as pretty as I should look. And then now I feel bad. And there's this insecurity with that. And so just to come full circle to that conversation, seeing my daughter on her wedding day not need to wear makeup and not care if she was that pretty. She is pretty. She's fine, but she's fine just with herself. She didn't need to feel like the queen bride of gorgeousness to be happy. It wasn't about that for her.
Hmm.
So that was really interesting.
Hmm. I've made a comment on your makeuplessness.
Oh, when I don't wear makeup, yeah, you like it.
It's just, it's very special. It's like the wife takes off the hijab, you know? I'm like, ooh, look, wife. Wife raw. Wife nude. My wife. Like, you know, I remember in high school, there'd be this, you know, I'd have girl friends. I'd have female friends. And this is California. This is the 90s. Makeup was pretty cakey, you know, like there was a lot of cake. There's a lot of hair stuff.
Yeah.
And it was shocking when you first met a girl without makeup on. Like, like you'd become her friend enough. And then, like, you'd meet at church or you'd meet at school.
Yeah.
And then you'd meet her without the makeup on. And you're like, whoa.
Who is this?
Yeah. It was really stark. And maybe it was partially a product of the time because makeup was pretty intense back then. But also just there's the public face and then there's the private face and being the makeup is kind of a hijab
in a way. That's it's kind of like the reverse though, isn't it?
Well, it's a line between the public and the private. Like in a way, one's makeup is a public facing face and so your attention goes on it. So it's a guard, it's a sheath, it's a cover of you. It's kind of a lie in a way, or at least deception a little bit. Not to say that any of those things are necessarily bad, but they're all kind of there.
It's interesting what you're saying, and I would say it's only like it because it exists on the same spectrum. So if you have the nude face here,
go with your gender fluids.
If you have the nude face here, then you could have the completely covered face here and the completely made up face over here, because what you're doing is producing and enhancing and inviting. You've probably seen some of these videos they go viral now and then, where somebody who is really like a really unattractive woman who there's this one
catfish.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But there's this one who has lost her teeth, and she'll start with putting in her dentures, which fills out her face in a way that makes her face structure looks nice. And then she puts on her makeup and she goes from being like, homely. Somebody that you wouldn't look, yeah, you
homely to comely.
Homely to like stunning, like not just like okay, but gorgeous, like supermodel looking, from being really really plain. And the comments on those are really interesting because the men feel so upset about that. The men who comment, they're like, this is makeup is a lie. You're cheating men. You're lying. You're presenting a falseness. And I find that really interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that goes back to what you kind of hinted at, or what we've spoken about before, about the shallowness of gender and sex debates online. Mm-hmm. And by gender, I mean like expectations, intersexual expectations. There was a case a few years ago where a husband sued his wife because she ended up having a bunch of plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. And when the children popped out, they were ugly AF. And he's like, you lied to me.
Did that really happen?
Yeah, and he sued her.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
For deception.
That sounds
gross deception.
That sounds apocryphal.
But I do want to highlight that you were saying something really interesting that I didn't mean to imply by saying that hijab is like makeup is like a hijab, whereas hijab hides, makeup produces, makeup evokes, makeup is drawing attention to oneself, or at least blending
hijab
in.
Hijab just the hair part?
I think that's another gender fluid, man.
Yeah.
It can go all the way down to your ankles.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't
I don't know the words for the different garments.
Yeah, I don't know either. So.
Okay.
Forgive me.
Yeah.
So
Eric
any
says,
other?
Wasn't that in Korea? Korean plastic surgery. I could see that. They do some really extreme things with faces there.
Do you have any other regrets?
Regrets?
Regrets.
Regrets.
That's why I titled it. I'm going to change the name of the title.
What is
title.
It? No regrets?
Regrets. Yeah.
I don't know. Any regrets? I have a lot of regrets. But not any that are like gnawing at me in order to need to bring them up right now.
I have some, but my been thinking about a lot about my personal life and stuff that I'm not going to bring up on YouTube, but like it has been about regret and like thinking through that and watching myself like slowly that fade, or like that sense of responsibility, regret and guilt, not shame, but kind of like this pressing feeling that's been kind of weighing on me for a while now, for years now. It's kind of slowly, it's just slowly shifting, and I can feel like a little bit more space in my life, because it's weird how these emotions take up space. And once the emotions kind of, like, especially negative emotions, I guess, they just take up space and you can't really, it's a weight. It's really interesting. It's like a weight, you know, all the metaphors we use for that, mm-hmm. you know, kind of really true. You're like, oh, that's ebbing away. That feeling's ebbing away. And then like, oh, I have more room in my mm-hmm. life mm-hmm. for the positive things of life or to be free of that particular thing.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
The metaphors.
Yeah. We can get into the Jewish question if you want now.
What about it?
I don't know. It's all the rage right now.
I don't know. Hmm. I don't have enough of an opinion to weigh in on this.
I mean,
what is the question?
Well,
the Candace Owens thing?
Right-wing Twitter is like had a very interesting meltdown. Wilfred Riley said something interesting. It's like, it was probably a net benefit that the crazy right has been censored and the crazy left is not for the last 10, because now we're seeing the crazy life, crazy right, like get its due. Mm. And you're like, okay, here's some unsavory ideas. Here's racism. Mm. Oh my goodness. Okay. That's really intense.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of tribalism, and I think in terms of, you know, what's happened in the last 6 months with regard to, you know, the discussion around Israel
mm-hmm.
coming back up, and you're like, okay, well, consistently white people have been shamed, have been told not to have any sort of ethnic identity, told not to have any ethnic pride, told to actively hate mm-hmm. and denigrate themselves. And then you do this unfortunate thing. You start to notice who's writing mm-hmm. all the books about white guilt.
Oh,
who's writing all the books about white genocide? Who are all these professors? And you start to notice these things and you're like, huh. And then you're like, okay, we're not allowed to have an ethnostate. Huh. But somebody else is. You're like, huh. So how are we going to have this conversation if I, you know, and then if you look at the stats on white people generally not having a lot of salience around ethnicity, like generally saying it doesn't really matter. Like we've really been taught to be colorblind. And then like we taught our generation was like 90s. It wasn't perfect, you know, and there's problems with not noticing race, you know, there's problems of it, but like, it's generally a good rule of thumb.
I didn't notice race, but
then to like be kind of soft about it. Like this is a category, just like sex, just like gender. Right. This is a category. It's something that I notice and we'll see how it manifests and see if I can get along with this person or not, you know, but yeah, like you notice things, especially on group levels, you notice things, you notice differences and stuff. But I think that the American whites have been taught and inculcated to be really kind of not as that, not being as important,
mm-hmm.
kind of being something that we kind of joke about and stuff, but not really kind of seeing through that mm-hmm. more or less. And then critical race theory comes along. Then the Great Awakening happens. Then you have like white people being taught now to actively hate themselves. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, this is going to snap back. This is going to snap back hard. This is inevitable. Where is it going to land? Because it's gone too far. We have to notice.
Mm-hmm.
How do we notice? And with regard to Israel, with regard to Jewish overrepresentation in a lot of very powerful fields, the fact of Ashkenazi Jew intelligence being very high, 25 in 1,000, or like their genius levels really high,
mm-hmm.
You're just going to see this representation, allowing them to have their tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing me to have my tribe is probably the best way to go. It's like, listen, I have a tribe, you have
but
a tribe.
Is there a tribe? I mean,
that's the thing. Like, we think that we don't want to have a tribe. We have this soft tribe.
I don't even know that there is a tribe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
You don't feel tribal.
No, and I don't sense tribe either. I think that there's a lot of complexity within, I mean, any particular culture. I don't think, I've known plenty of Jewish people that are just human beings like everybody else. I don't sense a tribe.
When the chips are down, Christians
are like that too.
That's what's happening now with Christ as King.
I don't know. Right? I guess I find the whole thing really honestly tiresome because it feels like the same process and the same pattern of like, let's get in and fight with each other about our differences. It feels like the exact same pattern overlaid on lots of different parts of life.
Yeah.
And I'm much more interested in connection. And also interested in, I think that one of the patterns that seems to be so pervasive is this pattern of thinking that we know how to live for somebody else. and that we can judge something that is far away from us. I think this is one of the greatest things that Jordan Peterson has said, is the clean your room thing. Like, start with concentric circles around yourself and work on this stuff. If you ever get this stuff done, then move to the next circle and start critiquing that and move in that manner. And guess what? Most people will never move farther than just the circle one out from themselves, because there's so much to do and there's so much to worry about. And if we take radical responsibility for ourselves and for the immediate connections in our lives, we don't have that much energy to go out and critique how other people are doing things. And things, I think we falsely perceive categories and patterns from a distance that when you get in there and you look at, they're very different. Yeah. And I don't know. So in race, nationality, gender, all of these different things, they really fall apart at the level of the individual. And this is the
Yeah, but they rise thing. Up on the level of the group. They but exert they themselves on the level of the group.
And we can opt out.
No,
and that's
I don't
the
think
only way to stop this kind of feeding frenzy is to not be one of the things that's feeding.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I want to put on those Pollyanna glasses.
It's not Pollyanna.
And say that, I mean, I agree with you. In practice, I'm an individualist. In practice, I'm a liberal. Mm-hmm. In practice, I'm a classical liberal. In theory and in responsibility, I'm highly skeptical of the ideals of liberalism and of being able to be applied by any other than a very specific ethnic nationality, which is where it came from. The Scots, the English, like, we're the ones who came up with liberalism. Of course it's going to make sense to us. It's in our genes. It's bred into us. It's just, it's naturally a part of ourselves. We're cosmopolitan. We're aristocratic. We're individualists.
Well, I think it's also just, it's interesting. It seems like people do, they operate both at the level of the individual and of the group.
Yeah.
And that's just how we are. And I think that there's an imbalance in favor of acting on the part of the group right now. And I've talked with young people who are so
underdeveloped,
desperately sad and anxious about the state of the world.
Yes.
About the state of climate, about LGBT oppression, about other issues that they feel like they need to be an activist in order to go and do good and prevent these things from happening, that they feel like all of their instincts to make something better are being turned towards the group level. And there's this sort of hopelessness on the level of the individual. Like, they don't have a sense of how they can progress and how they can take responsibility for themselves. That hasn't been encouraged in young people. Yeah. And I think
You're
the
right.
only way to shift that back, unfortunately, is to start shifting it back one person at a time. And you can't yell at a group to go and mind their own business, because you're minding their business when you're yelling at the group. So the only way is to just one person at a time begin the process of demonstrating that you're taking personal responsibility.
I totally agree with you in practice, but I'm still bringing up, like, there's these group level phenomena that I find interesting.
Yeah.
On the level of politics, and politics is about group behavior, and it's troublesome and it's low res, but it's salient and it's powerful, and it's something to be aware of. It's something to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to be aware of it, but in point of fact, I treat everybody as a creature of the one almighty God. Like, everybody's created and has their own trajectory in life. And my role as a God-fearing individual is to try to recognize that unique budding potential soul in other people and connect with that somehow. Now, that's not going to happen through the internet. Necessarily, it's not going to happen through Twitter necessarily, but it's going to happen through my content. Hopefully I evince that through my content, through my conversations, right? Through my ability to ask questions, to listen to people, and to serve people in the world, you know, like, as a human being. And then also find people and promote people who are going through the process of recognizing who they are in a world of complex groupishness and apishness and dead wives.
No, I really love the conversations that you have just for that reason. They're very personal and very, very much on the level of the individual and recognizing the, that's one thing that you do really well, I think, and I've thought that for a long time, is offer the space for the individual to kind of be idiosyncratic and show some personality that makes us all so different. You know, I think that's really lovely.
Yeah, that's art.
No, it's really nice. I think it's great. And I think that there are several, I don't know, there's all these different patterns of human group behavior right now and individual behavior. I think one of the really strong imbalances also is an information seeking imbalance. I think people are over ingesting information. We have this infotainment thing, this machine of needing to know more and learn more. But are you learning more? You are, but at what cost? Is there something that is there something negative that comes up over cognition?
Remember when you just said, I don't think we should think in terms of group. Who's that we?
Yeah, I think that, well, the internet. Like, you think about the way I read something recently that 25% of adults say that they're addicted to social media. And I think that sounds low. Sounds like a very low number. I think it would be many, many more people have problematic internet use or internet use that they wish that they could curb, that they think that they're spending too much time on their screens. And one of the ways that we do that is by needing to gather lots of pieces of information. There's some process.
Do you
process.
See that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like...
When, I mean, I guess it's my job, so I don't see that.
Well, maybe you don't see it as a problem for yourself, and I don't mean to imply that it would be a problem for you if you don't see it as a problem. But I think that there's a loss that I hear this a lot. There's a loss of long-form attention span. So we don't have... as many people look sitting and reading books. What am I looking at?
Oh.
Sitting down and reading an entire book versus scrolling.
Yeah.
You know, we've changed the way that we interact with information. We're consumers of information. And I think that there's something in that, that it's another one of those patterns that's shifted out of balance. I don't really have a...
You brought that up several times. I'm waiting for like something concrete. It's one of these ideas. We have conversations.
It comes up and in you my have conversations like, with other people.
You know what a bison is?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're sharing a mindscape, you know? Yeah. And like there's these different these topics that like you see this bison start to emerge from the fog, and then it kind of like, I'm like, well, what? And then it kind of just walks off into the fog. And you're like, okay. And then you see it again. I'm like, oh, there's that bison. I see a little bit more of it. So that's just like one like theme that I can tell. It's like,
yeah,
it's just like
a bison,
burgeoning
in the fog.
Bison.
Well, I think that there are lots of, I've thought before, like, what is the purpose of I don't know how long I want to do the YouTube thing, but what is the purpose of doing it? There's multiple purposes, I guess, but ultimately why am I having conversations in front of people? Why would I do that? What's the point of that?
For attention.
I mean, I don't, yeah, I guess, right. I guess, but I feel really vulnerable doing it. I don't really enjoy that. I feel self-conscious. I don't really enjoy being the center of attention that way. I don't know how much that comes through in the conversations that I'm having, but mostly they're not conversations that I'm developing in order to transmit some ideology or some way of thinking to other people. It's just, if there's any purpose in it, it's the curiosity and the open exploration and the willingness to be wrong, to be curious, to wonder, and to notice things, and then just show that I'm doing that. Other people are doing that as well, to engage in that intellectual discovery process. And so when you notice the bison walking, or the bison of over information consumption.
No, just the topic. The
bison of over scrolling, of social media addiction or whatever. It's not in order to, I'm not noticing it so that I can tell people what they should do about that. It's because it's food for thought for me. It's food for thought for other people. If they happen to be thinking the same thing, we can all be thinking it together and maybe talk about it in ways that might spark something for someone and might spark. This happens to me a lot. One of the things I do really appreciate about this conversation project, the whole YouTube thing, is all the different people that I get to speak with are really giving me lots to think about. Mm. I've got so many rich conversations running through my mind all the time. Yeah. So it's really been very helpful to me in that way.
And you guys have talking groups under Solid Ground. You guys have openings right now if people want to get into
it. We always do, yeah. We will expand as we need to.
You host these, like, what, 9-person?
Well, however many show up. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But we host them every
groups
week.
And where people kind of get together and throw ideas back and forth with one another. Mm-hmm. You're very community-oriented.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
For an individualist,
can I talk about a game that I can't wait to play?
Yeah.
Game of the week. Viticulture. So we've only played one game of this, and it started with you telling me to tell you what to do because you're like, I don't even know what to do.
It's complicated to learn, but it was I caught on by middle of the first game.
It's really well done.
It's beautiful.
I didn't think I wanted this because it was kind of flat online and
stuff.
That's
so pretty.
But it really, they really did. Even the rule book, like, it's got this linen finish on it. And then you have little glass beads, and Leslie likes to move the glass beads from her wine bucket to her cellar. And she does it in such a sensually concentrated manner. She just really enjoys doing that. And I'm like, ooh, it's just a very delightful game. So maybe we'll play a game for my other channel.
Benjamin, oh, this is cute.
Are there any questions?
This one, Benjamin is impatient to see the whole bison.
No, I'm not. I'm waiting for it to emerge. I just don't see the whole thing. But
that's cute.
I have to go back there.
I'm just reading them.
Yeah.
Reading some comments.
We're just reading comments now.
Okay. CM Caps. As a teacher, I try to encourage those kids to start with helping their parents, siblings, and classmates. What's that about? Oh, yeah. Helping when take the focus from the things you can't do anything about to things that you actually can. Yeah. Groups take the brilliance of an individual and dilute it into something banal and bland. Yeah, that's right. I think that's right. And that's where you get categorical reductionism.
I led a song, a group song once.
What does this mean? Patriarchy, the home edition.
Yeah, thank you. Right, wife.
I don't know what that refers to. Yeah.
Me. It refers to me. I'm the patriarch, dude.
Yeah.
Is that not obvious by now?
Oh, my gosh.
Women.
Oh, I like this one. I like the name, too. A troll with a purpose. Just remind them that they do have the ability to think.
Who?
People, I guess.
I guess so.
Thinking out loud.
Yeah.
Thinking out loud. Yeah.
So, should we close with the song? Do you have a song?
Are you going to sing one?
Yeah, do you have a song?
What? Your AI songs from last...
Oh, you know what? We've made some AI songs, I don't want to play them until I know if they'll get copyright, because music is one of the things that YouTube will copyright.
Well,
sorry.
They were really funny. That's so, it's so disturbing. I was like, I both thought it was really cute and clever.
Maybe I will just put
they're it like in this. They're so catchy. They have like this formula down pat.
All right. So this is AI generated. And this was after the conversation we had last night. Yeah. The gender conversation last night. So if it loads.
Maybe if you sing along with it, it won't get copyright struck.
I don't know. Here, let's play it.
Oh, no.
She's a girl, but she don't fit the mold. She argues about gender, got a story to be told. She wears her jeans and flannel, ain't afraid to
get dirty. Jeans and flannel?
She ain't afraid to get dirty.
People put her down cause they say it ain't right, it ain't worthy.
Yeah.
Leslie stands up tall, she's got fire in her eyes.
This is all AI.
It's so cheesy, but it sounds just like pop country.
Yeah.
Like it's, it sounds like every song on the radio. Okay, what did you put in to get this?
I just put, I would try to do Patsy Cline because I wanted a Patsy Cline country western because that's what we've been listening in the car, like the old 50s, 60s western, country western music. But they wouldn't do it because Patsy Cline. You can't put names in. I did 60s, but then it just came up with...
So what lyrics did you prompt it with?
No, I just said... I just said, like,
gender?
Yeah, there's a 60s, laid back 60s country western song about Leslie who argues about gender.
Oh, and that's what you got.
Yeah.
The one about the cheese was really funny.
Well, so my stepson, Leslie's son, wait, where are you? He's got an issue. He's got many issues, actually.
No, he's a sweetheart.
Well, that doesn't mean that he doesn't have issues. So one day he was like, he was trying to cut brie.
It was sitting on the counter. It was very soft.
And he had a knife, and he couldn't cut the brie.
Well, he was frustrated because it kept collapsing.
Because he's got no follow through. He's like, like, I can't cut it. I'm like, it's
and so brie. Now it's this running joke where you keep saying he can't cut the cheese, and he
in
we
a
all laugh.
Quiet little town called Surrey lived a man named Adrian, so serene, but there was one thing he couldn't do.
Cut cheese
is just not his forte, it's true. He tried, he'd struggle with knife in hand, but the cheese would crumble, it wasn't his plan. With each failed attempt, he'd shake his head. Why, oh, why can't I cut this cheese, he said.
Anyways, that's a it's app.suno.ai, and it just came out. It just dropped a few days ago, and you can make AI songs.
It's weird.
Yeah, it really freaked her out when she heard the first one.
Yeah, because it's like wait, oh, I said nobody will ever make music anymore. Why would anybody make music anymore? The whole arrangement is there.
Yeah.
I think it's going to hurt. I think it's going to hurt artists.
No, I would love that. I mean, I would just feed. I have the whole Evergreen musical all done.
But then it's not special.
What are you talking about? It's not special.
That's not special.
My music is very special.
Yeah, yours is special, but that's not special.
It would do all the arrangement for me.
Ugh, that's garbage.
She doesn't believe in technology.
Yeah, I don't.
You're a Luddite. No, you're like, lagging Luddite. You're like, I don't like anything that's younger than 10 years old.
No, I don't. I don't like a lot of things that are
older than 10 years.
Okay. Old. Yeah.
Do you have any last thoughts? So Solid Ground, you have a channel, you guys have support groups. How people sign
solidgroundsupport.com, I think.
Solidgroundsupport.com.
Yep.
I'm Benjamin Boyce. Subscribe, consider donating to the channel if you enjoy this content, because that really helps out the content. And
and go watch my video on porn, because I think it's being shadow banned.
Okay, Leslie's got a video on porn.
Yeah, it's an interview with a guy who does recovery coaching.
Oh, porn recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You should have added that.
Oh, I should have?
Yeah, because it's just... Yeah, that could mean in a lot of things. So about porn recovery.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And that it's got like, it's being shadow banned.
Yeah. It's really weird. It's like I post that up and crickets.
Yeah. Well,
but not just for that video. Algorithm always suppresses everything after. Everything since then. It's like I went from tons of engagement to crickets. Yeah. And I think that there's something.
Nobody wants to be thinking about that kind of stuff.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. Maybe. I mean, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You guys have a good
great
night.
Week.
And we'll see you soon.